then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you O'Farrell, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be, in the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more bore for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your bike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night, many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely croon, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, and a thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's May the 17th, 2012. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Okay, first, a quick recap of something I covered last week. Now, as expected, the JT Ready thing is rapidly dropping off the media's radar and is now pretty much gone. The Southern Poverty Law Center has established the official version of events, and that's pretty much the only version that anyone else will be allowed to know. If you Google his name, most of what comes up about JT Ready is from the SPLC. Now, be he saint or devil in real life, all anyone will ever know about JT Ready is what Morris Dees and Mark Potok want them to know, and that's pretty vile, no matter what really happened. In point of fact, several interesting items have come out of the woodwork. Now, number one, it's looking more and more like JT Ready was in fact working as a confidential informant for the FBI when he went off the rails, if indeed that's what happened. Now, for one thing, the Facebook pages of Lisa and Amber Medeiros were located and screenshot before Mark Zuckerberg's lickspittles could pull them down, and Amber Medeiros and her child were definitely non-whites. So we have the alleged big bad white supremacist and anti-Mexican dude living with one woman who race-mixed and tolerating her mestiza offspring. Now, that's very, very odd indeed, not to mention very reckless for Reddy's public image. Now, whether he was legitimate or not, how did he know that the media wouldn't pick up on it? Unless, of course, Reddy's handlers at the Bureau put a muzzle on the media in order to protect their asset. Now, it seems that Reddy also boasted to some liberal-left journalist at the Phoenix Times that he was a federal informer. Needless to say, this journalist just couldn't seem to find the time to mention this in his column until after Reddy was dead. Curiouser and curiouser, said Alice. Now, there was an edited 911 call from the daughter published by the police and played over and over again in the local media in Phoenix until everybody was sick of it. In view of the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin incident in Florida, we now know that more often than not, a lot of 911 calls broadcast by the media have been previously edited in order to conform with left-wing liberal political ideology and also the official version of events. But even the edited version of this JT Ready call does not actually explicitly state that Ready was doing the shooting. Also, an FBI document, the search warrant for the premises dated the morning of the shootings, has been uncovered, which reveals that the two vehicles containing Hispanic men observed in the Gilbert, Arizona neighborhood of J.T. Reddy's house just before the shootings were not, in fact, figments of conspiracy theory-obsessed right-wing minds. They did exist, apparently, although now they've been airbrushed out of the picture by the FBI. And they have joined John Doe No. 2 and the early morning Oklahoma City Bomb Squad and the dancing Israelis filming the burning Twin Towers on 9/11 in that weird lost limbo of people who have been clearly seen by witnesses near violent events that have benefited the United States government's hidden agenda, but who have suddenly vanished from the media and from official documents in a puff of smoke. That happens a lot in this society. People disappear in more ways than one. I did some Googling this morning, and the latest is that the FBI was allegedly, quote-unquote, investigating J.T. Reddy for plotting to kill Latinos in some kind of unspecified manner. This was based on information provided by an informer whom I will not name, lest some moronic U.S. attorney claim I'm inciting something. But you can actually find his name on the internet in mainstream media articles. My understanding of the current rules is that the mainstream media can name names, but I'm a wicked and evil person, so I can't. Anyway, this informer supposedly came forward 2 years ago, and yet the FBI, who were supposedly investigating Reddy for this alleged plot for 2 years, were not aware that he was allegedly trafficking in stolen military weapons, specifically grenades. But I guess they must have become aware of that fact real quick, because on the morning of the shootings, 20 minutes after the first call came in, the whole street in Gilbert was locked down by FBI and BATFE and ICE, of all people. And my understanding is that the local police were more or less pushed aside, much to their resentment. And all of a sudden, a military truck shows up backing into J.T. Reddy's garage to deliver the grenades. I'm sorry, did I say deliver? I meant take the grenades away, of course. Slip of the tongue there. Look, I think we know what happened here. Reddy was apparently a typical movement dysfunctional, that I'll grant you. I was never too impressed with him, and I don't know many who were. Although, to be sure, we're talking Facebook here, and that's all our movement is anymore, internet. The FBI employed him as an informer, and whether he went off the rails and killed his family, or whether he was murdered by Mexican gangs for his perceived public image, that fact is now a profound embarrassment to the Bureau, and so now silk-suited asses are being covered. The narrative has been handed to the Southern Poverty Law Center, and J.T. Reddy's reputation, rightly or wrongly, will be destroyed forever in a farrago of SPLC lies. All anyone will ever know about Reddy's life and his heart and his mind is what Morris Dees and Mark Potok want them to know. And in a way, that's almost as bad as suing people and taking their homes and all their property and forcing them to sign papers giving up their rights. You know, if they ever find me dead in here, violently or otherwise, I really shudder to think what the FBI and the SPLC is going to say about me. They'll probably claim I was torturing little kitty cats in my closet for satanic rituals or some such crap. Now, I'm not kidding, you know. When I say that 30 years ago I was accused of sacrificing the headquarters cat in a black mass or something in the building that we had on North Street, I guess we should be glad that Morris Dees never decided to run with that one. Now, this week, Gretchen the Librarian has some comments to make about movement people and practices that kind of impinge on the J.T. Reddy case, at least the first part about flashing guns in the air. So Gretchen's up now, and I'll make a few comments of my own afterward.
Comrades, you know, I've attempted to say this before on the show, but it's never been put on, but I have the rather maverick opinion that we are entirely too involved with guns in this movement. Now, I know there are rare cases where self-defense can make sense, but I also think there are lots of times where people might get in trouble either for having a gun or because some mishap occurred. Or, I don't know, a person had a nervous breakdown, or who knows what can happen. And I think that we all need to be a lot more careful, and we need to think to ourselves, do I really need this? Is this the best approach in this case? Do I really need to place guns? I think often we, as a group, tend to overdo these things, and then find that somehow or other we get ourselves in trouble, and everyone's wondering, well, how did this happen? So I think this is just something that we all need to reflect on. Is this adding something to my life, or is this just making matters worse? I've seen so many cases where it just seems that we make matters worse. But when we take on this posturing with all these weapons, I think it becomes more problematic than it is a solution. Another thing that I think we do entirely too much in this movement, We get ourselves involved in conspiratorial theories. I think there are several problems with this. One problem being that, let's say that one were to believe in intense and very deep conspiratorial theories that were put in place by higher-ups. The problem with that belief is that even if it's true, there's really nothing that we can do about it. If you're going to say there are these vast, extreme conspiracies, then the question is, all right, you've stated a problem. You've stated a religious belief in these theories that you've found all this evidence for, but what really should be done or how should this be addressed? And oftentimes one gets so involved in these retrospectives and proving these theories that one gets stuck in that place and you can't really go any further. You're like a fly on sticky paper that just can't go any further. So that's one of the problems I have. The other problem I have is that I tend to think that once something is known by, let's say, three people or more people, the fact is most people really don't keep secrets very well. Most people blurt things out. They say the wrong thing to the wrong person at the wrong time. So most people are not very good at covering up things. So that's another reason I tend to doubt conspiracies. And of course, at the end of the day, you just end up rehashing the past and talking about things that you can't control, whether they're true or not. So that's why I tend to turn away from conspiracy. Another thing that I have a problem with, and it kind of plays into what's been happening lately, as Harold was saying, anytime someone becomes a one-note symphony, anytime you focus on only one issue, such as conspiracies or undocumented workers, then you really, again, you get stuck in one issue. You lose, I think, the larger picture. And of course, anytime you try to be two things at once, if you're not sure who you are, if you're not sure what your goals are, then again, you'll start to become fixated on one topic. And again, you start to have various problems. You get lost in a certain corner, or you get it into a corner. And so those are really my thoughts right now. And I think these are all things that we should consider in our lives. So I hope that you really think about this and consider, what's my purpose? What's my point? What am I trying to do? Am I helping myself? Am I hurting myself? So these are things that we all need to really think about. All right, and I hope we'll all do that.
Okay, I've made my views clear in the past on the subject of flashing guns around, but since most of you hadn't had the chance to download and listen to all the RFNs for the past 2 years, I'll lay them on you again real quick. A gun is a tool, like a hammer or a screwdriver or a carpenter's level. It belongs in the hands of the craftsman who will use it. It does not belong in the closet rusting away. It does not belong buried in an oil drum in Cosmoline somewhere way out in the woods or under the floor of someone's barn where you can't get at it if you need it. Neither does it belong being flourished and waved in the air in front of television cameras while some idiot wearing Walmart camouflage babbles like a fool about all the wild and illegal stuff he's going to do. I've also made my views on individual episodes of Proactive Initiative clear. Don't do them. Direct action without a political basis and without some kind of achievable political goal is simply suicide. Ask the order guys. But waving guns in the air for the television cameras and acting big and bad like J.T. Reddy did, whether he was working for the FBI or not, is not only foolish, it makes all the rest of us look foolish. Don't do that either. Better they should fear than that they should laugh.
The beast in me is caged by frail and fragile bars. restless by day, and by night rants and rages at the stars. God help the beast in me. The beast in me has had to learn to live with pain and how to shelter from the rain. And in the twinkling of an eye, might have to be restrained. God help the beast in me. Sometimes it tries to kid me that it's just a teddy bear, or even somehow managed to vanish in the air. Then that is when I must beware of the beast in me, that everybody knows. They've seen him out dressed in my clothes, patently unclear if it's New York or New Year.
Hi guys, this is Axis Sally, and I have to say, I just want out. Out of the system, that is. I know you all can relate, but this time I'm talking about the banking system. Have you ever noticed the most effective threat anyone can make against you is, we're going to freeze your bank account? Well, what if you had no bank account? I imagine refusing to participate in the Jews' banking system is seen as similar to not being on the voter registration rolls, which I am also not. I'm starting to see huge advantages to not being traceable in the various ways people can usually be traced. Odds are I'll never get called for jury duty since they take names from voter registration lists. Since I don't own a home, no one will ever be able to seize my home. Morris Deeds will have to burn something else. The most common arguments I hear against keeping your own money in your rented living space are that someone will break in and steal it, or that it doesn't earn interest. Well, I don't know too many people who earn large amounts of cash by letting their cash pile up in a bank, and as for the money getting stolen, perhaps what people are afraid of is white people being in the mindset to protect what is theirs. How many of us have lost money by keeping it in the bank and having to put up with their fees, their rules as to how much you can take out and when, and their lax security procedures? I've never had money stolen out of my room, but seem to lose some every year to people who want to be me so badly they'll resort to stealing my identity in various ways. Then it's up to the bank whether or not I have a real case. If someone takes money from my room, I don't need to wait for anyone else to decide what should happen next. We're not supposed to be able to opt out of the system, because then we might start getting ideas about taking care of ourselves and looking after our own assets. I've already talked about parents taking charge of their own families when it comes to educating and disciplining children, which is, of course, illegal for white people to do. I've talked about self-defense and home defense, also off-limits to whites, because real white people don't need to call 911 when a scary nigger is hiding in their bushes scratching himself. We don't need these approved institutions. We know what to do. Take care of your own family. Take care of your own home. Watch over your own things. Shove your money under your bed with your shotguns and beef jerky and sit on your bed clutching another gun while your kids are breaking your TV in the next room on a school day. You don't need the TV or much of your other stuff. When the balloon goes up, you don't need to worry about packing up your video game players and bobblehead dolls. Expensive electronics are just other things for them to claim when they come get you for felony hate speech. I swear, people who don't have cable are also treated as renegades opting out of the system because without something to keep you docile and stupid, how will they be able to talk to you and tell you what to buy and what to believe? So let's say you don't have a bank account. Your money is accessible only to you, not to Jews, and maybe at first it's a little inconvenient having to get your paychecks and cash them yourselves, and if you want to buy music, you have to get an iTunes card or something like that. Another big argument for having a bank account is, well, how am I supposed to do any shopping online? Well, I don't see how buying food and weapons online is any easier than getting out of your house and doing it, so I'm afraid I don't understand what in the world you're talking about. I suppose there are other things you could buy online, but since we're at war and are supposed to be fighting a revolution, I'm sure none of you are out shopping for baseball cards and Aryanware backpacks. Be easy to move. Carry little to no attachments. Own only the things you absolutely need and get rid of those which are designed to keep you traceable. One day you will need to pack your family into your car, hopefully a car you will be able to dispose of easily if the need should arise, and flee to the homeland. There will be no time to close your bank account and send a request to get out of jury duty. You will not be able to sell your home. There will be no vacation request forms. Start questioning why you have something that everyone says you have to have. Take an honest look at your life and ask yourself if it would maybe be better in the long run if you did not have it. Odds are, if you don't control what happens with it, if you can't protect it yourself, and if anyone can use it to threaten you, it's a tool of the Jew and has no place in a white society. So from now on, anyone who wants to steal my identity is going to have to come to the room of a paranoid extremist to do so, because I don't intend to make it so easy anymore. I'm going to keep thinking of other ways I can ditch parts of the system in order to further remove the Jew from my world, and I'd be interested in hearing from others who have done the same. It's never easy, not while we still live in the world the Jews think is theirs. But one day, the Jews will know endless night, and even after all that, I will still never have been called for jury duty.
Okay, here's Doug, that new kid from Idaho, with a little piece he did about computer encryption.
During this segment, I will be going over methods of subterfuge. Though we have no intention of breaking the law, we must make it very easy for ourselves to exercise our Fifth Amendment rights if need be. The first thing that we should all be aware of is computer hard disk encryption. I have found that TrueCrypt.org offers a useful system of encryption that is free and works on Windows, Mac, and Linux. So far, I have used it on Windows and Linux. Depending on what Linux distribution you have, there may be some glitches, such as having to install TrueCrypt each time you want to access an encrypted disk space. Be sure to move your mouse around as randomly and as much as possible during the phase of setup in which it is required in order to make the encryption unique. Also, the best passwords are over 40 characters long. Memorize this password. Memorize in blocks if need be. Most people can memorize 7 characters at a time without too much difficulty, then put it all together. Next, review at least every day for a week, then once a week, then once a month for a year, at least. This commits the information to your long-term memory. TrueCrypt can be downloaded at TrueCrypt.org. Make sure you use an encryption algorithm as potent as AES. You will have several options when creating a space of encrypted memory. Now, I'm not sure that we all need disk encryption, but if you are worried, then it should relieve you of some anxiety. Another option is to save all of your secret stuff on a jump drive. You can get a 16GB USB drive at Walmart for under $20. This is more than enough for most things, unless you have lots of pictures, videos, and music you want to put on it. Thinking about what is essential, it should be enough. If you need more space, there are 64GB jump drives or larger. But they seem to be past the $80 mark as of the time of writing this. When you leave the house, you can hide it or take it with you. For maximum Fifth Amendment capabilities, make a copy of your data and keep this copy where no one will find it but you. That way you can destroy the data you carry with you if need be. Disk encryption is nice because you can always say you forgot the password. Without the password, it is doubtful that even someone with access to 1,000 of the fastest computers in current existence will be able to break into the data that is encrypted. However, the government might know how to break into it, they just don't tell us. Next, onto Aesopian language. You have to either be well-read or pretty creative to use this effectively, as far as my experience shows. An improv acting course could help you build some skill in this. I'd like to know what books a person has read so that we can have some common ground on which to build a fable that we both know the secret meaning of. With Aesopian language, you are talking, perhaps sharing, stories that appear innocent, but have a hidden meaning. Another advantage of using this method is that you can really start to scare some possible informants who are under questioning when you start talking about Gollum and how perhaps Bilbo made a mistake not putting Sting to better use when he first found the precious. Alternately, someone who hasn't seen the movies or read the books can be taken by near complete surprise. Then you can let the informant blow out his birthday candles, wish him a happy birthday, and then never see him again, because he will be off having fun at the beach in the West and won't want to spend any more of his time working for the man. When someone asks what you and your friend are talking about, you can say it's just a hobby to see who can outlast the other person in an improv storytelling game. Really, this is fun in and of itself.
Jews, for someone who allegedly suffered at the hands of the Nazis, they have this very strange, very unhealthy fascination with it. I mean, when I was doing the Orthodox National Socialist thing and I was at the national headquarters on Franklin Road in Arlington, we had a uniformed duty officer who would sit behind the desk in the literature room. It wasn't really much of a uniform. Kale didn't like us wearing the cross. Oh, for God's sake. Kale didn't like us wearing the cross belt or anything like that. Our headgear was crap, or we didn't actually have headgear. They actually had us wearing motorcycle helmets, and we actually were allowed to wear combat boots, at least. They wouldn't let us wear the proper engineer's boots like we wore in the NSPA. But anyway, there'd be this uniformed duty officer behind the desk, and there were several Jews whom we got to know who would actually come out there and try and provoke incidents all the time, because the word had kind of gotten around that there was a uniformed Nazi in this building on Franklin Road, and they just couldn't stay away. They'd drive by. Of course, we had the flag out as well. They'd drive by, they'd stop, and they'd jump out and take a picture and jump in their Cadillacs and leave. But we had this one guy named Steve Amplo. His real name was Jerry Levitt. He got a hold of a membership card, which in those days, if you just sent $5, Kale would send you a membership card with a swastika on it, which is ridiculous. We don't do that crap anymore for obvious reasons, but Jerry Levitt got this official supporters card from the NSWPP, and he was going all up and down Wilson Boulevard showing his card and showing his butt and making a stink, and some people actually thought he was one of us, and he was shoplifting and throwing rocks through windows and all this sort of stuff, and going in bars and getting drunk and starting fights and getting beat up, and But he would come by, and he would literally want to lick the duty officer's boots. And the first time it happened to me, it was, I won't get into it because, again, I'm sure you people think I make this stuff up. I didn't, but it's just, I was confronted on the lawn of the headquarters with this Jew who wanted to lick my boots. And what I'm getting at is we've always attracted certain Jews like that, or like the Jewish Klansman, Jordan Golub. If you hate them badly enough to want to kill them, they just can't stay away. They want to get to know you. They want to have this intimate dialogue with you. It's very, very strange. There are certain Jews, I'm thinking of one in particular, who's kind of cyber-stalked me for almost 15 years now. He clearly wants to insert himself into my life, and he wants me to debate with him on the internet, and he wants this long, weird, in-depth, personal cyber relationship or something. It's very kinky and very unhealthy, and I never respond. I have not responded to this guy in years. First time he started it up, which was about 96, 97, I sent him a few sassy comments and obscenities or whatever, but I very quickly realize that's not a good idea because, as with any stalker, what he wants is contact. Now, usually they'll give up after a while. This Heeb has never given up in all that time. He just can't stay away from me. Okay, enough on that stupid article. Finally, Sally came up with one here.
I was actually wondering, thinking of that book, it's called Stuff White People Like, and I was wondering if maybe Gretchen the Librarian had ever read it. It's not very intellectual or historical, like the stuff she usually comments on, but this book, it's basically a big list of stuff that stupid white liberals like. You know, things like going out of their way to prove that they're not racist by trying to collect all the black friends and gay friends and black gay friends with children that they possibly can to show the rest of the world how diverse and open-minded and just all-around better white people they are. And I think the book is worth having just to laugh at. And I was able to find a blog, kind of just a whole list of everything in the book. And I think people have been adding to it. But anyway, here's one. Okay, having black friends. Religions their parents don't belong to.
All right, this is for very sick white liberals. One of the things we allegedly like is being the only white person around.
Yeah, or Asian girls, you know. Okay, white people will often say they're spiritual but not religious, which usually means they will believe any religion that doesn't involve Jesus. Popular choices include Buddhism, Hinduism, Kabbalah, and, to a lesser extent, Scientology. A few even dip into Islam, but it's much more rare since you have to give up stuff and actually go to mosque. Mostly, they're into religion that fits really well into their homes or wardrobe and doesn't require them to do very much.
You know, now that actually is not too bad, and I wonder if the guy that wrote this maybe is a closet conservative or right-winger, because that actually is not too bad.
Well, I've seen a picture of him. He's got a little stubbly beard and wears a scarf, so I think
Let's see. Okay. Number 11 on the list that white people like is Asian girls. Why do we like Asian girls? Please note that this is one area where white women are exempt from, but they should be exempt from other things such as voting and participation in Division I sports. Blah, 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 blah. 95% of white males have at one point in their lives experienced yellow fever. Many factors have contributed to this phenomenon, such as guilt from head taxes, internment camps dropping the nuclear bomb, the Vietnam War. No, I never experienced yellow fever. I won't read this whole thing because it's just a long piece of crap.
It's gone.
Okay, well, let's find it again.
Basically, the whole book is about the kind of white people that I make fun of all the time. Got the vegans and vegetarians, the environmental freaks who, you know, would rather carry their garbage around with them all day if they can't find a recycling bin, reusable shopping bags. And, you know, nothing's necessarily wrong with things like going to the farmer's market, but it's the kind of people who will do so they can tell everyone about it and just basically point out that they are a superior kind of white person.
Yeah. As far as the stuff white people like on here, I've noticed stuff that normal white people like is conspicuous by its absence. Like, for instance, number 125, Bob Marley. I've never known anybody except a really degenerate white individual who likes Bob Marley at all. Okay.
Oh, being offended.
Where's that?
Number 101.
Okay, right. Okay, white people like being offended. To be offended is usually a rather unpleasant experience, one that can expose a person to intolerance, cultural misunderstandings, and even the scars of the past. This is such an unpleasant experience that many people develop a thick skin and try only to be offended in the most egregious and awful... This is just drivel. Naturally, white people do not get offended by statements directed at white people. In fact, they don't even have a problem making offensive statements about other white people. Ask a white person about flyover states. As a rule, white people strongly prefer to get offended on behalf of other people. Yeah, this guy must be a closet conservative of some kind. It is also valuable to know that white people spend a significant portion of their time preparing for the moment when they will be offended. They read magazines, books, and watch documentaries, all in the hopes that one day they will encounter a person who will say something offensive. When this happens, they can leap into action with quotes, statistics, and historical examples. Once they have finished lecturing another white person about how it's wrong to use the term black instead of African American, they can sit back and relax in the knowledge that they've made a difference. You know, I've often wondered, I mean, he's right about this. I mean, I'm sure most of us have met in our time this type of liberal asshole white. I really wonder if my novels were ever to catch on and maybe the Iron Heel were to loosen up just a little bit where we could get away with these things, how these liberals would react if they came along and they tried to meddle in somebody's life by objecting to their use of language or telling them to stop smoking or objecting to how they were dealing with their kids, and they were in some danger of getting a good smack upside the head. I'm actually quite serious about this. Maybe a good punch in the mouth that might loosen a couple of teeth, break a nose, leave some bruises, followed by a good little bit of the boot when they were down on the ground, and something to the effect of, mind your own goddamned business. What I do has nothing to do with you.
You know, I've never really traveled anywhere. I've been to Mexico as a child for a brief vacation, but I just can't imagine going up to one of the Mexican mothers or fathers there and just starting to tell them, you know, how you should raise your child, or, oh, you know, you shouldn't feed your child cow's milk unless it's organic. Just try that. Walk up to some non-white person and start telling them what to feed their kids and see what their reaction is.
Well, this is the essence of liberalism. Liberals want to tell other people how to live their lives, other white people. You know, they never try this on niggers. They never try it on Mexicans. Basically, liberals want to feel superior by telling other white people how to live, and they want the power to enforce their little view of how people should live, which is how we end up with things like Obamacare and Priuses and windmills and no smoking areas and all this sort of stuff. Now, the thing is, I can't help but wonder what would happen, and this is just a for if. I'm sure the FBI agents who listen to this are kind of perking up their ears right now. Maybe he's going to say something. Let's imagine what would happen if it was actually dangerous to be a liberal. If there really were an evil racist conspiracy to do down the United States government and to remove the Iron Heel from our necks, and this group or organization or movement or whatever really was pulling some triggers. And suppose it was actually dangerous to go up to somebody and try and tell them whether or not they could light up a cigarette, or tell them they were abusing their child, or tell them they were driving the wrong kind of SUV or something like that. Because these liberals knew that that guy that you're meddling with just might decide to smash a few of your teeth in, and if you were really unlucky, he might decide to pull out a gun and put a bullet in your head. And because we're in a revolutionary situation and the government has lost its credible monopoly of armed force, there's a pretty good chance he could get away with it. In other words, liberals are offensively liberal because they know they can get away with it. They know that they have these big, muscular, steroid-pumped cops who can come at their beck and call and take away any nasty little white boys who dare to resist or dare even to talk back. But suppose the big, steroid-muscled cops wouldn't come when they were called. Suppose the government had neglected to pay the steroid thugs. Again, let's say hypothetical that such a situation existed. And all of a sudden, it was no longer chic. It was no longer safe to be a liberal. If you want to be a liberal, you've got to really believe in it. You've got to believe in liberalism enough to put your life on the line to be a liberal and continue to try and meddle in other people's lives. How many of these liberals do you think believe in that crap enough, literally, to risk their life for it? Not many. And I think one way or the other, fairly soon, we're going to find that I'm right about that.
I'll do a lot of editing. I'll have to do a lot of editing on that. I'm just babbling here.
Sorry.
Okay, so.
Well, another thing I noticed in the book, and I don't know if it's on the website, really, but one of the things in the book that white people apparently love is following their dreams and, you know, being yourself. And it specifically mentioned things like, okay, a 40-year-old white person quitting your job and going to get some undergraduate degree in something really stupid like poetry, writing, or, I don't know, deciding that at that age you really want to become a singer because that's your dream and that's your passion, and who's going to tell you you can't be everything you want to be and follow your dreams? And really, that's suicidal. Okay, I think I'll just spend my life savings on this, forget about my home and my family and my responsibilities, I'm going to follow my dreams. I don't think other races and other cultures really do that. I can't imagine some Mexican man saying, you know, no, father, I will not be in the family business because I want to write poems.
Well, I hate to say this. I'm probably going to get in a lot of trouble for this, but let's be honest. Some of these, not niggers, I mean, niggers are just animals, but some of these brown and yellow people and these Arabs that we look down on and that we hold in such contempt, in many ways, they got a lot better sense than we do. They are a lot more practical. And like I said when we were talking about the Iraqi emos, they don't put up with the kind of shit that we put up with. And as far as following your dream, in this economy with Obama, I don't know how anybody can afford to do that. I suppose a few of the ultra-rich Democrats can afford to maybe quit at 40 and go off and go back to school and get a degree in basket weaving or flower arranging or something. But a lot of this liberal bullshit isn't going to be practical anymore from now on because society is collapsing. The money is running out. People have more things and better things and more urgent things to concern themselves with than this liberal horse manure.
My breath knocking you out or something?
No, sometimes I just don't have any other response than, okay. Yep, you tell it.
This is Artie McGlynn. A few weeks ago, I mentioned that an old National Alliance hand once described to me the plan of the late Dr. William Pierce, which was to make sure that his group produced the best propaganda it could, and then somehow got that propaganda into the hands and hearts and minds of the last few remaining white people in this society who have real power and wealth. Millionaires, legislators, military officers, senior government officials, cops, maybe even a few judges and media people. The idea being that these last few remaining white men with money and power would more or less stage a kind of palace coup or internal revolt within the system. Now, for a variety of reasons, I don't think this is the way to go, largely because I believe that the 1% are far too gone in their own moral crapulence to ever be of any use. But I won't wander off onto a long theoretical tangent here about that. I'm willing to concede that Pierce might have been onto something. It's possible that such an idea might work, even if it could only ever partially achieve the kind of results that we seek. Now, I will say this for Pierce's strategy. It was probably the most serious attempt we've ever made to communicate with the 1%, pardon the lefty lib expression. Actually, you know, that Occupy Wall Street terminology is not a bad way of describing our ruling elite in this country, although the rest of us certainly aren't the 99%. The 1% actually rules over about 50% white people and 49% niggers, Mexicans, faggots, and hopeless liberal dumbasses who would vote for Jack the Ripper if he was running on the Democratic ticket and was endorsed by Arianna Huffington. So I'll tell you what, this week I'm going to try to put William Pierce's strategy into operation. I'm going to make a serious effort to try and get through to some people who do have at least a small amount of actual power, not least the power to kill with legal impunity. And I'm going to see if I can maybe plant a few seeds that may blossom later on at some unknown time in the future. Now, this is probably a futile exercise, but what the hell, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Now, you'll recall I've joked around in the past about FBI agents and U.S. attorneys huddled in their offices and cubicles, hunched over their computers every week with their hands cupped around their ears near the speakers, listening to these Radio Free Northwest podcasts and parsing every sentence, looking for some wild stretch by which they can claim I'm inciting to something or threatening somebody specific or breaking some other law that they can use to silence me. Basically, that's what federal law enforcement is about these days, silencing criticism of the government and shutting up anyone who asks certain embarrassing questions, like who fabricated the Edgar Steele tapes, and who was signing J.T. Reddy's paycheck, among others. Well, without going into details, I can tell you that we now know I wasn't joking, and something of the kind really is happening. Yes, Virginia, they really are listening. Oh, I knew this before, of course, but now we really know, if you get the difference. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to attempt to have a serious, although necessarily one-way conversation with the white agents of the FBI and Secret Service, and whoever else is listening to these podcasts, with a view towards silencing criticism of the government for your employers. I am not speaking to Negroid or Mestizo or Sodomitic federal agents. Although for propaganda and internal politics reasons, I doubt many of them have been assigned to this duty. It's politically necessary for the Bureau to use demonstrably white agents to destroy white dissent, probably those buzz-cut Mormons J. Edgar Hoover used to favor. Neither am I speaking to any U.S. attorneys or other lawyers. It's not that you lack the intelligence to understand, but you lack the necessary moral baseline. No, I'm not just being insulting here, I'm simply stating a fact. There's no point in anyone on our side even attempting to approach any attorney, U.S. or otherwise, on a moral basis, because there's nothing to approach. In law school, they were required to participate in what's called moot courts, mock trials in which two individuals or teams of law students are given a hypothetical case to argue in front of a mock judge and jury. And then when the first case is done, these students then change sides and must present the exact opposite argument and win, or do their best to win. In other words, it's impossible for any man or woman even to get out of law school, never mind pass the bar, without demonstrating that they are completely amoral and therefore fit to be officers of the court. So in this podcast, I am going to speak only to the actual gun-toters, the guys and a few gals who do the door-kicking and screaming and the threatening and the handcuffing and the interrogating and the beating and the waterboarding and the dog-killing and the sticking automatic weapons to the heads of five-year-olds to get information from their parents, that kind of good stuff. You do horrible things to earn your monthly direct deposit. But if any federal employees are at all reachable, which is a dubious proposition, I admit, then it will be you guys and not the lawyers. I am willing to concede the possibility that some of you may actually have some vestiges of a conscience remaining, not to mention a brain capable of calculating your own self-interest. The lawyers are all brain and self-interest, and they never had a conscience to begin with. For the record, I don't expect any kind of response to this, other than possibly my door crashing in the dawn and some coward in black body armor screaming at me and shoving an M16 muzzle in my mouth. And if any funny emails start showing up in my box claiming to be from FBI agents, I won't believe them or publicize them. So all you goat dancers and general idiots and internet trolls out there, don't waste everybody's time, please. I won't be playing. Just this once, I'm going to make a serious attempt to try and get through to you people who basically function as Obama's hired killers, because unlike attorneys, I think most of you weren't always like that. And because although, as you've gathered, my opinion of you isn't very high, I know that the white men and women among you have both the intelligence and the necessary genetic receptors hardwired into your chromosomes so that you can understand what I'm saying to you, if you will let yourselves. Now, you probably won't let yourselves, but what the hell, let's give it a shot. Okay, I'm not going to try to approach you on a moral basis. I think most of you understand at some level that what you're doing is wrong, but you've clearly erected a structure of rationalization to allow you to deal with it. and to continue doing what you do, drawing that direct deposit every month and getting that medical insurance. And I'd also like to add that for those of you who have children, especially children with health issues, I consider the FBI's medical insurance for families to be the only excuse that is even remotely acceptable for you to keep on doing these horrible things. Not enough to let you off the hook, and I kind of doubt it's enough to let you off the hook in the eyes of God when your day comes to account for your actions, but I understand it. And if I were in your position with a sick child or wife or parent, and destroying human lives on the command of an uncouth third world tyrant was the only way to pay the medical bills and maybe keep them alive, then I can't sit here and swear to you that I wouldn't do it myself. By the way, I hear that you FBI and Secret Service guys and your families get the same medical coverage that the regime provides to members of Congress, which is to say, the absolute best of everything you need, and you never pay a penny. That's a smart move on the regime's part. They need you, and they need your guns to keep them in power. The time is rapidly approaching. In fact, the time may already be here, when that health coverage will be worth more than your actual salary. Your direct deposits will be worth less and less, and there will be less and less stuff in the stores to buy with it. But as long as the regime can provide doctors and medicine and health care without you losing your house, it'll be worth it to stick with the Bureau. Now, I get that. Could be that's the only reason some of you are sticking with the Bureau right now. Nobody except the 1% has that kind of coverage anymore. You FBI and Secret Service guys are 1%ers, believe it or not, because the power structure finds it expedient to share some of the 1%'s wealth and goodies with you. That means that you're the guys in the black hats. You do understand that, don't you? If you don't, then in your own self-interest, you need to. Now, I suppose there's a few of you FBI agents, especially white males in their 30s and 40s, guys who did a few years in the Marines or the Rangers and still wear the buzz cut, Mormon or 700 Club types, guys who still cling to the 1950s even though you're too young to remember them. You're probably married to some Barbie doll with 2.5 kids and 2.5 cars in the garage of your suburban split level, since FBI agents are among the few groups of people who can afford the crushing mortgage on a suburban split level anymore. Hell, FBI agents are one of the few groups with any job security to pay off a 30-year mortgage. I'll bet when you go into that split level, it's got a well-trimmed green lawn and a big-picture window, American flag hanging on the porch, nice pastel-painted walls, and the floors and the coffee tables are all polished, and the carpets are all plush and sweet-smelling, and maybe a picture of Jug Ears Bush on the wall, maybe a picture of Jesus, maybe some evangelical CDs about Israel and Iraq. What somebody once called that creepy Pat Boone feeling you get when you go into certain white people's houses. Kind of like time stopped in 1960. Odd lair for the guys in the black hats to hang out in. Look, don't misunderstand. I'm not trying to needle you or heckle you or insult you. I'm simply stating a fact that everybody knows. In this society, you are the guys in the black hats now. Never mind all those stupid cop shows on TV like Criminal Minds and Bones who try to portray you as heroes. That's Hollywood. It has nothing to do with anything in the real world. Now, you do understand that nobody actually buys that shit anymore, don't you? You torture people. You destroy families. You destroy lives. You hurt people when the evil men who are paying you those direct deposits tell you to. Now, white people may be weak and cowardly and dazed and confused, granted, but everybody, except maybe some of you, understands the fact that the regime you work for is evil and that you do bad things. I'm not talking about this as a moral issue. I told you I wasn't going to do that. I'm speaking of a practical fact of life that you FBI people have to deal with sooner or later when you can no longer keep up appearances. You can't continue to rule indefinitely over people who hate you. History proves that. Ask the Israelis. They've been trying it for 64 years this month, and we all see how well they've done. Nobody tells you these things because they're afraid of you, but we all know. Guys, no bullshit. Swear on a stack. The overwhelming majority of the white population of this country despises you. The fear and loathing that you and your agencies and the government you work for inspire in normal people is one of the worst kept open secrets in America. Those cop shows portraying you as heroes are a kind of a sour joke that no one dares to laugh at openly. I think deep down in the privacy of your own thoughts, you know that I'm telling you the truth here. You have the law, you have the guns, you have the spy cameras and the judges and the whole apparatus of a surveillance state, you got the prisons, and above all, you have the money. But I am going to tell you something, and if you got two brain cells to rub together, you better listen to me. No one, no government, no society, no group of people who rules by fear alone ever lasts. Fear and enlightened self-interest, maybe. Now that's how America's lasted as long as it has. But the self-interest factor is about to disappear. I will talk about that after the third music break. I think this is an appropriate number for those who preside over our country's little mask of red death. This is Camille Saint-Saëns, Danse Macabre. That actually goes on a lot longer, but 2 minutes is enough. Okay, so again, looking at things not from a moral, but from a purely practical and self-interested point of view. What are the long-term prospects like for your typical FBI agent and his family in the year 2012? Now, are you really going to be able to put in your 20 or 25, get a pension that will be paid for the rest of your life, in money that will actually buy things, and then go on to some cushy private security job for some energy company down in Texas or whatever? Now, is that world still going to exist in 5, 10, 15, 20 years? Now, if you're white, especially white and male, you have things stacked against you from the beginning, career-wise, no matter what office you're in. I don't claim to have any moles in the bureau, but I do know that affirmative action applies to all government departments and federal agencies. I suspect that some effort is made to keep it to a minimum in the FBI because the faceless men in suits who actually run the government understand that their power rests largely on your guns and your muscle, and they don't want to undermine that. But AA has got to be in there somewhere, and I'm sure it's at least an intermittent problem for you. Now, I'm sure all you white guys, Buzzcut 700 Club or whatever, are working alongside, and sometimes under the alleged command and supervision, of men and women whom you know damned well do not deserve their present rank and position, and who got it only because they've got skin the color of shit or they've got tits on them. I'm tempted to say, ha, 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 you got a dose of your own medicine, and what's good for the goose is good for the gander, but let's think about this, you men with families and children. I suspect this is why so many FBI men have to bust their balls out in the field in order to impress the SAIC, and beyond him, impress their rabbis in D.C. I mean rabbis in the bureau sense, not the Jewish sense. Do they still call them rabbis? My information on that may be out of date. Anyway, I'm sure part of the pressure to get the little gold star on one's forehead from the suits in the J. Edgar building for terrorizing a confession out of some teenage girl, or fabricating an audio tape, or beating and half-drowning some Apu from the Quickie Mart comes from the fact that white males have to work twice as hard because they're not eligible for any quotas. White males don't have any pull in the bureau anymore, so they have to rely on push, as C. Northcote Parkinson put it. Neither is it any mystery that things have gotten immensely worse since that stupid nigger Eric Holder took over the Justice Department. I don't need any moles in the bureau for that. It's all over the media. I mean, Operation Fast and Furious. Police, nigga. Yeah, I know that was ATF, but I'm sure we both know that there are FBI equivalents somewhere. I suggest that JT Reddy cock-up down in Arizona was one of them. Boy, you guys sure can pick them, can't you? Do you understand that the policies of the government that's paying you to hurt people and muscle people and fabricate evidence and perjure yourselves on the witness stand is creating a world that your children will have to live in? That you are helping Barack Hussein Obama and Eric Holder and Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and Arianna Huffington and John Stewart and Rachel Maddow make the world that your children will have to grow up and try to survive in? Are you familiar with the American buzzword blowback? Do you really think that the blade you are wielding against us at Obama and Holder's command doesn't have two edges and that you will never, ever cut yourselves? Don't you think you might want to sit down and maybe rethink some of this shit you're doing? Because you're not just doing it in a vacuum, guys. You're helping some very bad people make a very bad world. A world that will be like a stopped-up toilet that your children are going to have to swim in and maybe drown. And there's other things I think you need to cogitate on as you sit there in your cubicles trolling the internet or shuffling papers or sit there in those endless meetings listening to some fool or bitch who doesn't know shit from Shinola drone on and on and on telling you all about it. I've spoken in the past about the day when the first of the month rolls around and you go to the ATM or you log on to your bank account and you find that direct deposit hadn't shown up this month. That's already happening with the welfare system in some places, like that time a few months ago in Georgia when all the EBT direct deposits were several days late because the state ran out of money and they had to get an emergency bailout from D.C. in order to prevent massive nigger rioting. Now, they saved that one, and they'll save the next one and the one after that. But at some point, somebody in D.C. or more likely in California is going to drop the ball, and you're not going to see that direct deposit on the first of the month. Oh, they'll probably get you your money in a few days and tell you all about how it was just a computer glitch the first time. Then will come the time after that, and the time after that, and the time when you don't get any money at all, but you get some kind of vouchers or IOUs, like happens all the time in California and New York City and Chicago and other blue states where the money's running out. Now, that may happen, but what's more likely is that you'll keep on getting your direct deposits all right, but the money won't buy anything. Do you guys pay any attention at all to what the hell is going on in the world outside your own computer terminals? Do you honestly not get it how badly, how catastrophically Barack Hussein Obama has screwed the pooch? Never mind the debt, just look at the daily and weekly and monthly cash flow. More is going out of the federal coffers than is coming in, and it's been that way for years. And we are now finally within sight of the point where the kitty just plain runs dry and there is no more money and nowhere to get any more money. And the United States government that pays your salary has been living on borrowed funds for God knows how long, and most of the gross national product of this country now goes simply to pay interest on a debt that has grown to something beyond all human comprehension. Tax revenues are collapsing because people who are out of work don't pay taxes. Bet you didn't think of that, did you, Barry? They draw unemployment and other benefits out of the public funds. Where do those public funds come from? Real unemployment and underemployment, as opposed to the official figures, which are simply lies that no one believes, is still around 18% or so, and looks like it's going to stay there. That's the new normal. The super rich, the 1%, won't pay taxes, the poor can't, and the middle class is being exterminated and forced downward, so basically no more tax money in any amount that might make a difference. The United States has already been officially downgraded once in the international money markets, and even the Chinese won't lend us any more. Now, on top of that, add the coming Israeli attack on Iran, the closure of the Straits of Hormuz, and gasoline hitting between $12 and $17 per gallon by Christmas. En passant, if you bureau guys plan on getting me on something this summer in time for the election so you can get your little gold stars on your foreheads, you better do it quick, because next winter, most of you are probably going to be pulled out of your nice warm cubicles over there in Seattle or wherever to deal with all of the assorted insane fallout from the Jewish attack on Iran and the subsequent energy catastrophe. Now, if you don't go ahead and fabricate some audio where I supposedly try to hire Dry Ice Washington to put a bomb on Kim Kardashian's SUV, then, in addition to all your other problems, you're going to have to listen to me razzing you on Radio Free Northwest while you try to deal with all the Iran-related crap. Boy, won't that be adding insult to injury. How will the regime deal with this upcoming crisis when there's no white middle class left to tax and when no one will lend us any more money? Simple. Barry will pick up the phone and call his little Jewish friend Ben Bernanke over at the Federal Reserve, and they'll start printing money. I think you know where that road leads. A week or so ago, a friend of mine sent me a JPEG image of the latest Zimbabwean trillion-dollar note. You'll get your direct deposit every month, all right, it's just it won't be worth a bucket of warm spit. Okay, look, I need to wind this up, so let me just say this to all you FBI dudes out there who are listening to me. Just something for you to think about, not from a moral point of view, like I said, but from a purely pragmatic, personal, self-interested viewpoint. Is the kind of world that you are helping to make through your employment with a bureau good or bad for your family? Not right or wrong, just is it the kind of world you want you and your wife and your kids living in? Is it the kind of world that offers you and your family hope and opportunity and fulfillment? Is this new world that you're helping Barry and the Bozos create the kind of world where those you love will be safe in every sense of the term? Is it the kind of world where they will have a chance to be happy someday? If not, then why are you doing it? Well, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington, 98104, or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Andaban. Freedom.
Still is beating heart.